Welcome in, everyone, to the Fun Radio Podcast. Fun and much more. Fun and...
then some.
Then some.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
We're going to have a little bit of fun, talk a little bit of everything under the sun you can think about, and just spitball for the next little while.
I'm Michael St. John. That is Adam Ward. We want to thank our good friend Chad Sanders, the Director of IT Operations for the Fun Media Group, for joining in today, helping us out with this podcast, as this will be uploading very quickly here this afternoon.
And, our first studio audience.
That's right, of one. Of one. So anyway, a lot to talk about. Of course, last week, the heels of the terrible tragedy with Kobe Bryant, Super Bowl over the weekend, the Westminster Dog Show coming up at the Madison Square Garden, which is always something fun to watch. Professional wrestling coming to both Birmingham and to Huntsville. And of course, talking about a little bit of what's going on here at Fun Radio. But let's start about something that we all really care about, National Signing Day.
Yeah,
officially for college football. Wednesday is the date that this professional class of college students will be signing with the various universities. And Adam, this is just something that has caught the attention of the world within the last 20 years.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. It's almost become like a holiday. I mean, the President Trump might as well just deem this a national holiday for every institution in America. I mean, what an awesome time for a lot of young men that are going to be making decisions that will not only affect their next 4 years worth of a future that could, but potentially affect the 20 years down the road if you're looking to become a professional athlete in whatever sports you might be participating in, particular with football and National Signing Day. You know, just a couple of years ago, they brought in that early signing day that really caught everybody kind of off guard, if you will. A lot of coaches said they were for it. A lot of them said they were against it. And that was something that, you know, we saw kind of play out. Nick Saban himself said, well, you know, I don't really care for it, but if we can make use of it, we will. Kirby Smart, however, over at Georgia said, well, you know, we're going to take full advantage of this if we can. And it's paid dividends. And then this year with the recruiting cycle, it's been a massive change up. 247 Sports is one of the top recruiting sites in the nation right now, probably one of the hottest as far as being the most accurate. They, for instance, moved up Bryce Young, who is already enrolled at Alabama, but he's still considered a signee for whatever reason. I don't know how that works, but they moved him up to the number one player in America last week. So that's a pretty big deal as far as if you're into the five stars and looking at those things. I'm more into the product that you actually put out. I don't care if you're a two-star guy, you got the heart of a lion, a champion, you get out there and work your tail off. If you can play, I don't care if they rate you as a one-star. If you can play, you're going to play.
It's going to be interesting is many schools now are using that early signing period as a barometer of how they're going to do and how hard they need to work between that date, which comes prior to Christmas, and then the date that comes up of quote-unquote National Signing Day, which comes up the first Wednesday in February. And to top all that, you're also looking at a situation where now more and more players are committing as juniors, sophomores, even freshmen in some occasions to some of these universities. I'd be interested to see the statistics on how many of those commitments actually stick right through the National Signing Day.
Well, I know that, for instance, if I go onto my Twitter account right now, all of a sudden, within the last 6 weeks or so, maybe even less than that, all of a sudden, my feed has been blown up with all these different recruiting Twitter feeds that are coming up, recruiting different young men from around our coverage area. A lot of guys, for instance, that nobody... And this is no disrespect to them, but nobody expected 1A and school A kids to be getting looks. I mean, that's just not the way it goes. Recruits don't come to the games and see them. They're looking at the Hoovers and Thompsons of the world in
the
Alabama.
Big schools,
yeah. But there's guys from these small schools now because of this being opened up to where five athletes just within the last week have been offered by the likes of like UAB, Jacksonville State, South Alabama. And we're not talking seniors. We're talking juniors and sophomores. So the reach is kind of getting out there a little bit. And I'm not talking, okay, we're going to give you a year's worth of a scholarship. I'm talking full rides have been offered here. I think it's sort of been opened up by the social media trend as well. But the thing is with these sophomores and juniors, to your point, they are still very young. And we think of an 18-year-old as a senior being, you know, still young. Go back even further than that. They're shopping around for their future. They got to make a decision based off of what's best for them. And that can be hard to do when all the flashiness of colleges are getting thrown at you when you're 15, 16 years old.
Well, I have a six-month-old grandson who is 27 inches at 6 months old, so I'm figuring I got to put him in the portal right away. because by the time he's two, he should be committed somewhere.
Yeah,
but anyway,
why not?
You know, the one thing I don't like about the early signing period, I like the fact that you've got a lot of kids that know where they're going. They've got their head on straight. They want to make the commitment and then get back, because many of them have taken the classes to graduate early from their high school and then enroll in college. And that extra semester, being at the spring semester, they get to go through a full workouts regime during the off season. They get to go through spring break, or rather spring practice. And I think it puts them ahead of the curve. That part I like. The part I don't like is I always like the mystique and the mystery and the excitement of National Signing Day. Yeah. It was almost like college football coaches opening up their Christmas gifts, you know, and that I always liked, which now it's sort of a, there's going to be some signees come in, quote unquote, late. And there are some people that are holding out because they think they're going to get their 5 minutes of fame on ESPN when they commit. So those are the only two reasons. But other than that, the real luster of National Signing Day, and when the Bama Club, the Red Elephant Club, would go down on the bus and go to the event, and Nick Saban would be in front of 300 people. Oh, we signed Joey Smith from Warrior High School, and he's 6'3", and he weighs 942 pounds and all that, you know. It's taken some of the luster off of that.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I really do. I also don't like the fact that the early signing period, I know that it's after the regular season has concluded and conference championship weekend is over, but we've gone to this playoff format. It's still a time that it doesn't affect, obviously, most of the teams with only four teams in the playoff, but there's affects teams that are getting ready for these bowl games. Some of them are meaningful bowl games to these programs. They need this win, whoever they might be playing against, to sort of continue their relevancy or get them back into the national scope, the national picture. Texas being one of those schools that ever by the end of every season we're kind of going, are they really back this time? Can we expect another collapse by Tom Herman and the Texas Longhorns, or are they going to do something? But then they're worrying about these young athletes who are 2 weeks after the conference championship is over, they're signing, they're making these early commitments, and I get it, I really do, but I do think it takes away a little bit, not just from National Signing Day, but I think from the attention that these coaches and the staff really should be putting into, you know, what the season may be over as far as the regular season is concerned. We still got a game to get ready for, and I know a lot of them, you know, it's a meaningless bowl game, we're only playing in the Bahamas Bowl, but if you're really trying to build a program, you want your focus to be on the kids who you've got right now, and those signees are not who you've got right now. I think it takes away not only from National Signing Day, but I think it kind of derives the attention a little bit of the staff. Now, you know, I know they're recruiting year-round, so some people might think, well, duh, but I still believe that it does, in fact, play a role in interfering in some preparation for a game when that time could be spent making sure that you've got the guys that you have now prepared.
Well said. One thing, too, is that it amazes me how every service now is a guru. I mean, you got people that never played football, that never knew what a damn football, how many pounds or how many ounces it was inflated to, that think they know who the next All-American great left tackle is going to be.
Yeah.
And it's mostly people that have lived in their mother's basement most of their lives and are married to the cat. I mean, it's just that it's absolutely ridiculous. I wish there was a recruiting service and or quote unquote a service out there that were run by ex-college coaches. Give me a recruiting service that Coach Gene Chizik is part of, that the former coach at Vanderbilt that looked like Steve Martin, whose name I can't think of right now, is involved in, that Rich Brooks is involved in, that people that know what the hell they're doing.
Larry Fedora from North Carolina.
Exactly. You know, people. Now, show me a panel of 10 of those rating these athletes nationwide, and then I'll believe who's a 1-star, 2-star, 3-star, 4-star, 28-star.
Like, yeah, I mean, and why not? We already put them on the talking heads on ESPN, Fox Sports, and all these other places tell us how good that they are. But I mean,
all your local yokel, you know, talk show people that are talking sports, like we're local yokels, but we have a little bit of knowledge about the game. Between you and I, we have over 60 years of broadcast service, and I mean, you know, we talk a little bit about it because we've done those games and seen what is good and what is bad.
We've seen these athletes in person, and the thing that I take great pride in is I have not missed, and this is just for an instance, most folks know me as the, you know, play-by-play for the Fife Red Devils. I thought about this the other day, and it's amazing to me. I have not missed a high school football game inside Long Ridgeway Stadium or otherwise wherever the Red Devils may be playing since 2011. That is awesome.
Well, here's your gold medal and popcorn, so go over in the corner and play. Speaking of gold medals, Super Bowl, and woo, one of the least hyped Super Bowls, one of the most lackluster lead-ups to the game I think I've seen in Super Bowl history, and I have watched every one of them on TV and or in person. And then on top of the two teams that were involved, San Francisco and Kansas City, yawn, Kobe Bryant gets killed the off week. And the attention of the sports world goes from Super Bowl 54 to the death of Kobe Bryant. Then they come and play the game, and dadgummit, doesn't in turn have to be one of the better games.
Yeah.
And without a doubt, and if you follow us at Fun927 on Twitter, you saw at halftime where I tweeted the fact that this was the first time that I could remember in forever that the game and the halftime were a heck of a lot better than the commercials.
Well, I agree with the game part. I don't know about the halftime. That's a totally different story.
I thought the halftime was awesome. I got news for you. Anytime that you've got good twerking on TV, it's got to be good.
We'll sit on opposite ends there on that one. But I will tell you this, though. The game, you got to give credit, a lot of credit, to Coach Andy Reid. Oh, my gosh. This man has been waiting for nearly 20 years for another shot at another appearance in a Super Bowl. I mean, he had his chance when he was with the Eagles, with Donovan McNabb, and they could not get it done. And this is, I think this is one of the sincerely true good guys in the coaching ranks in the NFL. Lost his son just a couple of years ago, a tragic accident there. And you really feel for him. You really feel for the big-hearted man who, instead of saying, you know, he was going to go do something like Patrick Mahomes going to the Disney World or whatever, he said, I'm going to go have the biggest cheeseburger you've ever seen. Maybe it'll be a double. And Reggie Ragland, by the way, from Huntsville.
Oh, man.
Bringing the Super Bowl back to the 256.
Amen.
How awesome is that?
It is very awesome, and congratulations. And I know there are a lot of folks at Bob Jones, Coach Patterson, and the crew out there. They do a fabulous job. That's a great, great high school in our state. And to have an alumnus like Reggie Ragland, who, by the way, is a good person.
Yes, he is.
He is a good person. And I like that, and the fact that, you know, the ring comes back. But, yeah, the game to me, when I first started watching it in the 49, it was pretty, you know, I got the feeling that, and I said this before the game, and I did not bet on the game, but had I bet on the game, I would have taken the under on the over-under.
Yeah.
Because I thought, because the defenses were maligned in the press for so long, and they were both good defenses, that it would be a lower-scoring game than what they thought. But the amazing, and I don't know if you realize this or not, but the spread, had the touchdown not been scored in the last minute or 90 seconds by Kansas City, San Francisco would have beat the spread.
Yeah.
And people that would have bet on the Niners would have won the bet. Don't tell me that Vegas doesn't know.
Yeah.
The over-under was within 2 points, and the spread, and that guy scoring the touchdown, the guy from LSU, Claiborne, or what Tomlinson, whatever the running back's name was,
Damian Williams. Yeah.
Scoring the touchdown at the last minute on that, you know, one defender goes the wrong way, gets chop blocked, boom, he hits the hole and he's gone. Don't tell me that Vegas doesn't play into this whole thing. Yeah. Don't tell me that. I won't believe it.
I also heard something interesting on the way in earlier this week, that there was also another bet in Vegas about how many rushing yards would Patrick Mahomes have in the game. And I think they had set the over-under right at 34 rushing yards in total in the game for Patrick Mahomes. Well, he killed it on the final three plays because he took knees. And he didn't just, you know, like the normal take a knee, you take one step back and get down. He ran back 6, 7, 8 yards.
Yep.
And ended up losing, I think, between the three plays, a total of 15 yards, which only gave him like 23 total rushing yards in the game. And according to Vegas, more people took the over than the under. Oh, so it actually hurt a lot of pockets. So Vegas knows, except for those little minute details that kind of play into it, where it gets you. Not Vegas, it gets you.
To me, playing those hedge bets, if you would, those I call them exotics because that's what they call them on the dice table. When you put your $5 on boxcars on the next roll, if somebody hits boxcars, you're going to win. In most casinos, you're going to win 30 or 60 to up to 60 to 1.
Yeah.
And that's a great bet for a one roll bet. But it's also a sucker bet because if you keep playing it every $5 every time it pops, you know, you can play it all night long and it hit one time.
Right.
So I don't play the exotics. I don't play the over-unders normal.
While we're on the subject of the Super Bowl, and you take a look at our business and what we do, you and I both take great pride in our production, whether it's on a football game or otherwise, or something on the air, it doesn't matter. But as you watched that game last night, whether it was from pregame to postgame, and excluding the halftime, because that's always choreographed and everything there, within the game, you don't really know exactly how you're going to do something per se up until that last possible second. What did you think of Fox's overall presentation of the game?
I loved it. I thought the sets, especially the sets over on South Beach, were outstanding. I thought they were colorful. I love the drone shots overhead that they continually did. The last time I was at Hard Rock Stadium for a football game was when Alabama played Notre Dame down there, and it was a dump. I mean, it was crap. And the very next year they remodeled it, and they literally left the stands and fixed everything else, which is what they needed to do.
Right.
And I had seen a national championship there back when Florida State played Oklahoma. I'd seen the Marlins play there. I'd been to that stadium quite a few times. But from seeing it now as to when the last time I was there, I would love to see that stadium again. But overall, I did like the Fox production. And I got to tell you, I thought the two sideline reporters, Aaron Andrews and the other guy.
I can't think of what his name is.
Yeah, used to be at ESPN. Yeah. Went to Fox, one of the earlier deserters from ESPN that went to Fox Sports. I thought they did a masterful job on the sideline. Better sideline reporting than I've seen in a long time for any game.
Yeah. I know a lot of the thing that I saw was people were gushing over the graphics being used and how, for instance, if like the last touchdown, for instance, with Damian Williams scoring the last touchdown, instead of putting his actual picture up there to show his stats, they used like a caricature.
Emoji.
Yeah. What did you think about that kind of thing?
I liked it because it's very cutting edge. And like I said, it's an emoji.
Yeah,
I'll bet you if you went to his Twitter page today or his Instagram or Facebook or wherever, I bet you see that emoji.
Maybe
because I think they did them for all the players in the game and gave it to them.
Yeah,
emojis are good. I mean, emojis are good because people that have fourth grade educations, like my mother-in-law, can still read.
I thought the overall presentation was pretty solid. I have seen better, in my opinion.
Do you really think so?
Yeah, I think it was.
What'd you think about the play-by-play?
The play-by-play was all right. I think some of the from listening to some of the clips on the radio over the last few days coming in with different outlets putting it out there, and especially the Kansas Chiefs personal radio versus Westwood One doing their radio bit with like Kurt Warner and all of them, I think maybe the radio had a little bit better of a call. But I think overall on the TV set, I kind of felt like they were just kind of letting you see what you saw and not trying to step in.
A guy that was doing Southern Cal football when I was living in Los Angeles in the mid-90s, a guy named Greg Papa, is the voice of the 49ers now and has been for several years. And he's a very colorful, let's say, play-by-play man.
Yeah,
I like Joe Buck doing baseball better than I like Joe Buck doing football.
Oh, I agree.
And maybe it's because I knew his dad, and his dad was the voice of the Cardinals along with Harry Carey, then Jack Buck, then Bob Shannon, and Mike Shannon, rather, and right on down the line. I really respect Joe Buck. Played in a golf tournament with him. I'm name dropping, but played in a golf tournament with him back in 1996. His dad's golf tournament in St. Louis. Very nice guy, very easy to talk to. Yeah. Just you and I talking. That's how. I mean, if you went up and talked to Joe Buck today, he'd talk to you just like you and I are talking right now.
I think
he's very non that star. He doesn't have that stardom shading to him. I don't know about Aikman. I don't know Troy Aikman, but I think Joe Buck did a great job on calling the game, the basics of the game. I'd still think though that Joe Buck is a better baseball man than he is football man. And people, you can disagree with me, but I do believe that.
Joe Buck's been calling football for a long, long, long time now. Of course, it's in his blood with his dad doing it. But I think the one thing about this that people maybe don't know is that the last time the Chiefs were in and won the Super Bowl 50 years ago,
his dad
was on the call. Mm-hmm. So I think this was sort of and it was the national call. It wasn't just the,
right.
I think this was played out, of course, how they were intending to do it. But I also think it was a little bit of a bone thrown to him to say, you've done it 50 years later after your pops did it, you know, so here you go. That would be a piece of cool family history for you here.
About 2 hours before the game started on TV, on the Fox pregame, which I think started last Wednesday, they interviewed.
Well, they couldn't have got started Monday because of everything else going on.
But the I think that the they interviewed the radio crew that did the call for Westwood One, and they were, you know, very more football oriented. I think I've got a question for you, and this is a good one, and because I've looked at it, Troy Aikman, former quarterback for the
Dallas Cowboys.
The guy that does the games on, is it CBS?
Tony Romo.
Tony Romo, former quarterback of?
The Dallas Cowboys.
Both of them are color commentators. Who's better? Who would you rather work with?
Who would I rather work with? Oh, gosh. and this can only come from a what I hear standpoint, because I don't know either one of them personally. But just for the simple content of it, I really actually like Tony Romo's content. I really do. And it was surprising to me a little bit, because I was never a Tony Romo fan in the first place, as far as his football playing. But the minute that I heard him, within like 60 seconds, do two play calls and commentate on what was happening, and really not just make a generic statement, well, the left guard did a great job of pulling out and picking up the linebacker. It was more to it than that. It's an in-depth, almost... You're almost getting that, you know, like everybody does the inside the game after the game's over. Well, it's almost like you're getting an inside the game while the game's happening. You're actually getting more than just the generic sayings and everything. They did a nice sweep out to the left or the right. You're getting, though, no, it's this guy's job. It's this guy's job to do this and this and this before the play even happens. And the knowledge that he expounds just by looking at the formation and knowing what's fixing to happen is unbelievable. And if I'll say it right now, if they find a way to take some of that talent and give it away, sign me up to buy it right now. I'll take some of that, because I could use that in my play calling. But I think they both do a great job. I think I like Tony Romo better, though, over at CBS.
I think that the difference in it is the fact that I really think that the difference is the preparation. And I think Tony Romo, because he's younger, because he's more attuned to today's society, if you would, I think he does more prep in the vein of what football fans today are all about, which is the instant gratification, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there was a study that came out during Super Bowl week that in the NFL, that the normal or the prototypical NFL fan does not care what happens or what happened with their team beyond 5 years ago.
I could see that.
And the loyalty of an NFL fan versus the loyalty of another fan of football, whether it be college, high school, another pro league or whatever, is the lowest among all the professional sports of baseball, basketball, hockey. The loyalty of football fans to NFL teams is the lowest for the NFL versus the NBA, Major League Baseball, or the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because I think most people gravitate to the NFL team, especially if you live in an NFL city,
right. That's
who you root for.
Right.
But if you move, I mean, I lived in three NFL cities, and I don't have a passion for any of the NFL teams.
Mm-hmm.
Although I had season tickets to the Raiders, I had tickets anytime I wanted to the St. Louis Rams, and of course we were part of the Titans network here at Fun 92.7 from the first year they were in Nashville for 10 years. But I don't, to me, there's not that passion that I need to go see a game, because I have the NFL Sunday ticket, so I watch all the teams on Sunday anyway, and none of them I am not passionate about.
Right.
Now, I will tell you that there are certain teams that I like and like to see them win. Titans being one of them, the Saints being one of them. But that's, I think, more of growing up in the South. I'm not a big Falcons fan, but I am. I know you are.
I am.
But I think part of that is from, if you would, growing up in the neighborhood of the South, and we're a few hours away from Atlanta. So that was the team you gravitated to, just like the Braves.
Well, of course, yeah. If I had to pick, I'm a Falcons fan and a Braves fan. However, I'm not really NBA concerns. I'm not a Hawks fan per se. Now, I mean, do I want them to do well? Sure, but if I had to pick between the three of the three major sports, the Hawks is sort of the least of the most there. And the Falcons, for instance, you know, we all know that they had a really crappy first half of the season, came on strong in the second half, just fell short of making the postseason. So at that point, you know, a lot of people are like, well, my team's out, so what am I going to do? I'm going to get drunk just to watch the Super Bowl. You know, that's kind of a party thing at that point. But for me personally, it's at that point, okay, well, the Falcons are out. I want to see a guy, for instance, like Reggie Ragland, get him a ring in the Super Bowl. Been, you know, I'm not a Patriots fan at all. I don't care for the Patriots at all. But I do like Dante Hightower. He's a former Alabama guy. I would love, you know, he's gotten rings. I want to see that kind of thing. I would love to have seen Derrick Henry for the Titans get a ring. You know, all those things kind of play into it for me. I kind of keep up with those guys. I want them to do well, except when they're playing my Falcons, then I want them to do well and lose. But I mean, yeah, you know, I'm sort of like you. I'm not a diehard though. I don't have to get up and go to – in fact, I've only ever been to one Atlanta Falcons game, and that was because the tickets were given to me. Now, I can say that I've sat on the 35-yard line behind the Patriots bench and watched the Falcons generally come back and beat Tom Brady, who's going to be considered the GOAT and a first-round Hall of Fame, unanimous ballot Hall of Famer. And that's very cool. That's a memory I have. I got to see Tom Brady play. But, you know, do I have to go on Sunday to go watch – is it just a burning desire? No.
Yeah, if you miss a game for the Falcons on Sunday, you don't cry about it.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't.
I got you. And I can watch the NFL and enjoy it on any given Sunday, but I don't live and breathe it. And really, when I saw that survey that the loyalty among NFL fans is the least of any of the major pro sports,
yeah,
I could sort of buy into that. Yeah. I sort of get that.
I think these things right here that I have in my hand, folks can't see it, but I have a phone in my hand. I think that sort of plays into it now because – especially if you're not a diehard, you don't live in one of those straight up cities like Boston or Atlanta or New Orleans. You can, you know, you're out and about, the game's going on, you happen to miss it, you can just go, okay, well, let me get the phone out, three clicks, and I've got the score in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Oh, how many passing touchdowns did Drew Brees have? Mm-hmm. Two? Okay, great. He's up to 47 on the year and he might break the record. You know, whatever. I think these things have sort of really kind of played a huge part in, and I don't want to say the dumbing down of the fanhood, but what else could we call it? I mean, it is what it is.
Well, the idea that everybody wants everything right now, I mean, it was real funny listening to some of the sports talk programs on Monday after the Super Bowl and how people in San Francisco were just ripping the 49ers, and it's not what it's all about. A game is a game is a game, and I think keep it in perspective.
I will say this for the average Falcons fan who suffered that back in 2016 to the Patriots, 28-3. I'm sorry for those who are listening that might be Falcons fans having to relive this. I think that was sort of, and I agreed with Trey Wingo from ESPN Radio on this. I think last Super Bowl was a sort of a an opportunity for Falcons fans to finally, they've taken so much grief over that 28-3, you know, shellacking that they gave up. They've taken so much grief off of that over the last few years. Now they have a place to put it in Kyle Shanahan. Second time blowing a Super Bowl. The first time he was the offensive coordinator for the Falcons. Now he's the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers.
Do you really
feels like that gave him some sort of justification.
Do you feel like he blew the game?
I do a little bit with some of his play call. I think especially in the first half, I know that's been, you know, carried over and scrutinized. I think he probably should have called the timeout with a little over 120 left to play in the first half. He was going to get the ball to start the second. You have an opportunity with all three timeouts. Pop one, you still have two. You got a minute 20 plus whatever after the punt. Take your opportunity at an extra possession. Try to steal one at the end of the possession, or at the end of the half, rather. I don't know that necessarily is what ended up causing them to lose. I don't think you can just point to that particular moment in the game. But I do think the fact that in the first half he didn't trust Garoppolo to, in the second half he started trying to trust Garoppolo and it didn't work out, instead of running the ball and protecting the lead. I'm not saying get totally conservative, but in my mind, I think he should have, you know, I think he was a little too hesitant to pull the trigger.
In my mind, I think it was all about the Chiefs. And the Chiefs have been a comeback team all year long, and they rallied at halftime, they made the adjustments, and they won the game. Let's move on to the commercials. Lackluster.
Wow.
That's the only word I can use. I'm part of and have been for now 8 years, part of a research focus group of media people, 100 nationwide, and I'm one of them. And I saw all the commercials before the game, before the pregame started. I saw them all before 11 o'clock yesterday.
Yeah.
And got to vote on them. And out of the top five, I'm happy to say that I'm still in touch with the American Universe.
And out of the top five, I had four of the five. I had the Budweiser spot about the first responders being my number five choice. And it ended up being, I forget what it ended up being. It was something else that was, it was further down my list. The one that came in number six was also in my top five, which was the Ellen DeGeneres and her boyfriend, girlfriend, guy friend, lady, whatever
the
it is.
Time traveling
with
thing.
The thing right before, what was the world before Alexa? I think it, I look at the commercials and not only the content and the humor or the storyline, but do they sell the product?
Right.
Bottom line.
Right.
And I felt like the best commercial that sold the product was the Jeep commercial. It was a Rubicon, I can tell you that, and it was orange.
Yeah.
With the Groundhog Day spot.
Yeah.
And plus,
Bill Murray.
They tied in all the scenes from Groundhog Day, which made it more effective in my mind. So I had that right. The Boston thing. Yeah, that was, I thought, was... Smot Pock. Having been to Boston and lived in New England and understand the culture, it was even better than the commercial was.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was. But I think it lacked one thing, and tell me what the car brand it was promoting was.
To be honest, I don't remember.
Exactly. And most people, I don't think, will.
Yeah.
And I think that was the one. I thought it was a great commercial.
Was
the concept
Honda?
Was good. It was Honda. But it was a great commercial. And it really sold the idea, but didn't sell the brand.
And, of course, if you remember the commercial we're talking about, if you're fans of The Office, John Krasinski, who played Jim Halpert in the show, you got Chris Evans, everybody knows him as Captain America, you got Big Poppy, who makes an appearance at the end of it.
Popped out of the window. Popped out of the window.
Big Poppy popped out of the window. And, by the way, did you know he lived there?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But I
can unpack the car.
I liked that one very well, but I do agree very much to your point. I think they might have gone for a little bit too much star quality pop power in that, if you'll excuse the pun, to the point where I don't remember. I had to think about it for a minute. Who was trying to sell something there? What company was that? You know, we're going to remember the Smot Pock, and all that, but the fake Boston accents. But I mean, it took me a moment. And the other one I think I really, really liked. And I don't know if it's so much a selling point per se, or going to sell the product, but and label me a homer on this one. I really liked it. You and I talked about this on Saturday. I really liked the one featuring Josh Jacobs, the Kia commercial.
That was real.
And it talks about just your 60 seconds that you got. You can go on YouTube and see like the 6 minute video of him telling the story of why they chose to go the commercial the way it did. But of him telling his childhood and dealing with being homeless all through high school to now being an NFL superstar, was, I think, second in the voting for Rookie of the Year behind Kyler Murray, former Oklahoma quarterback, who really, in my opinion, didn't deserve to win it. But to now he's able to buy his father a home, who his father growing up never had a home, while Josh Jacobs. And I think those are kind of those commercials that are meant more to hit home with you rather than to try to sell something.
Why doesn't, and whenever Coach Saban talks about the great Alabama running backs, you never hear Josh Jacobs' name. You hear T.J. Weldon, you hear Richardson, you hear the boy with the Titans, Damian Harris, you go down the litany of names. It's just that, did he get lost in the shuffle? Was he not here long enough? I mean, he's not... I don't think he's in the rarefied air among a lot of even Alabama fans that some of these other running backs are.
Well, he's not, and if all those guys you just named off, T.J. Yeldon, and Derrick Henry, Damian Harris, but especially between Harris and Jacobs, they both played in an era at Alabama where the offense was different than when Derrick Henry was there in 2015, his Heisman year, where the last four games they gave him the ball 40 plus times each game. And would end up with 200 yards and have to basically Alabama bruised their way to beat Clemson to a national championship, with the exception of the one game in that championship with O.J. Howard going nuts. But they had to bruise their way to get there. He had to bruise his way into Heisman, immortality to win the trophy. Damian Harris, I think, is sort of a little different because he's a You know, he was a little bit outspoken in his career at Alabama. He
reminded me of Mark Ingram all the way through his career. He was sort of the junior Mark Ingram.
Right.
And he comes off as a very well-spoken, a very bright guy, too.
Right.
And that helps as well.
Yeah.
And but
Josh,
you just don't hear Josh Jacobs' name mentioned in the same breath.
No.
And I think, and for especially for what he's done coming out of the going into the league, I think, if anything, he's achieved some higher goals than people like Trent Richardson, who is, you know, now trying to make a comeback in the XFL.
Yeah, which you'll see this weekend, by the way. But I think Josh Jacobs has already, in his very short stint with the Oakland Raiders, or now I guess the Vegas Raiders, now that the season is officially over, but I think he has firmly cemented himself for years to come if he wants to stay an Oakland Raider when his rookie contract is up.
Well, unless something major happens. Well, if he's going to stay an Oakland Raider, he's not going to be on
the Raider
team.
Period, you know. But you know what I mean. A Raider. I'm not going to get used to that. The Vegas Raiders.
I hate that name with Vegas. The nickname needs to stay with the city. I'm sorry. The Los Angeles Rams are the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah.
The San Diego Chargers are the San Diego Chargers, not the Los Angeles Chargers. Change the damn name. If you're going to move the team, change the name.
I can agree with that.
You know, it's like in St. Louis. I'm sorry. The Cardinals belong in St. Louis, not in Arizona. They were in Arizona. I was in Arizona the day they arrived with Bill Bidwell, and we interviewed. We were the first radio station to have Mr. Bidwell on the air, thanks to Timmy Hattrick and to Glenn Beck, who had literally camped at the gate they were arriving overnight to get them there.
Yeah.
But the Arizona Cardinals, the St. Louis football team moved to Arizona. They should have named them something else. I'm sorry. I think the name stays with the city. And people are going to say, oh, well, then, Michael, they should be the Chicago Cardinals. No, because back in those days, nobody knew what a football was.
Yeah.
Much less a helmet.
Yeah, that's true. So, no, I agree with that. But I think, personally, I haven't – now, you know, I've been alive for one or two teams making a change, but that was in the very, very early 90s.
The Houston Texans
came online during my time, but I was not old enough to even realize what was going on at that time when the Houston Texans came in to the league, period. Now, they weren't a transplant team. They just, boom, we're going to build a stadium and have a team.
But before that, the Kansas City Chiefs, who are the Chiefs today, were the Dallas Texans. When they moved to Kansas City, they didn't become the Kansas City Texans.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so...
Well, that one would just be totally stupid.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's my whole point. The Houston Texans took the Texans name from Dallas, from the old AFL, and brought it to Houston, which is cool, and that's fine. But the other one that sticks out and probably is the most tragic of all, the Baltimore Colts. The reason the Baltimore Colts were the Colts is because horse racing is a major, next to Kentucky, the second biggest state for horse racing in America is not California, it's Maryland.
Yeah.
That's why they were the Colts. The Indianapolis Colts make no sense.
Right.
There are no Colts in Indianapolis.
Right. It kind of flows off the tongue, if anything, but that's about it. And now in Baltimore, you have the Ravens, you know? And I kind of like the Ravens. You know, I think they done it at least well enough to know that you can't resurrect something that's completely dead, especially having moved off somewhere else.
But they did, because the Ravens were Edgar Allan Poe, who is dead and is buried in downtown Baltimore.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's why they're the Ravens.
Well, exactly.
Speaking of nicknames, baseball season's around the corner.
Thank God.
This Huntsville has a new stadium. It's Toyota Field, I think is what it's called.
I think so.
Right off of I-565. If you're driving the interstate any day now, between now and April 20th or 14th or 19th or whatever day they come on board, you're going to be in traffic galore because they're finishing the exit. I've heard all this hype and all this stuff about, oh, what a great stadium, what a great, and I'm wanting it to win. I'm wanting it to succeed. I love baseball. I love having the fact that there'll be another AA team in Huntsville. I hate the name.
Yeah, I do too. I really do.
I will not buy a piece of merchandise. I do not have a piece of merchandise. Nobody will give me a piece of merchandise that I will expect or wear that has the name Trash Pandas on it. I don't care.
Yeah. No.
I don't care. Because to me, a nickname is something that should relate to the city. And I'm sorry, raccoons in Huntsville don't relate with me.
Well, it's a nod to Marvel. It's what it is to the comic company, the movie, you know, big-time producer right now, Marvel. Because of the Guardians of the Galaxy, they've got a raccoon named Rocket on there. that's flying out through space, much like what Huntsville's known for, putting things into space, you know, putting rockets into space, building them and shooting them up. Well, the fact of the matter is, though, why they went with this, I'll never be able to tell. I can't even tell you. And Marvel kind of gave them a simple nod at the tip of the cap to say thank you for, you know, for what you did with your trash pandas in the Captain Marvel movie, when Samuel L. Jackson's character revealed where he's from after having done 15 movies for Marvel. He finally, you know, revealed he's from Huntsville, Alabama. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a tip of the hat, you know, to the trash panda, saying thank you for your nod to Marvel. We're nodding you back. I think it's, I don't know.
It, the
there,
name,
there was stupider, though.
Well, the teams that are coming on board now are all going through this one company out in California who must be on really good drugs. Their meth must be really strong. And they're naming all these stupid names for all these teams. I heard one the other day, the River Frogs, the River Bats, the River... Well, St. Louis, yeah, I was gonna say, Louisville, has the River Bats.
Yeah.
But this was something else along that same line, and I'm like, what? And it was a team in Iowa, and I can't think of the name.
Yeah.
But it was just stupid. And I'm like, well, I should be laughing. We got the trash panda. And being that they're not Huntsville, you know, to me, I'm sorry. You know, we had the Huntsville Stars. I wasn't always crazy about the Stars name, but I understood how it got there. And,
right.
And Larry
Schmidto, a little bit more sense.
Larry Schmidto named the team. He had the Nashville Sounds, which was a great name, still is. And he was a former coach at Vanderbilt. Of course, the president of the Texas Rangers, one of a great baseball man. Larry and I are good friends. He cut me when I went out for baseball at Vanderbilt the first day I went out for tryouts. Put his arm around me and told me, son, really appreciate you coming out, but I don't think we can use your services. Of course, at that time, Rod Freeman and Watson Brown and the entire football team was playing baseball and knocking the ball off the wall at Memorial Gym, and I'm out there knocking it over the second baseman's head. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that was the end of my baseball career. But, you know, going back to this trash pan, and plus it's in Madison.
Yeah.
And I know Madison is the coming thing, and I know, but it's like the Birmingham Barons were in Hoover. They moved back to Birmingham, and now you can barely get a ticket to the game downtown, and that's really rejuvenated that area. Where it's sat in all this is a fact. I think it is just a chance for developing another area of Madison with hundreds of multi-thousand dollar homes and apartments and shopping areas and all. And I think this is all a concocted, using baseball as a reason to concoct something, which is not to me. I'm a baseball guy. I love baseball for baseball. And I don't want to root for a team named the Trash Pandas.
Yeah.
I'll root for a team named the Cincinnati Reds, or I'll root for the team named the Chicago or the St. Louis Cardinals or the Los Angeles Dodgers, because I lived in all those cities.
Right.
Or even the Boston Red Sox, because I lived within 100 miles of that. But I can't wrap my arms around. To me, they'll always be the Madison Coons. Because isn't that what the Trash Panda is? It's a raccoon, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, according to the logo.
A more colorful name would be the Madison Coons.
Yeah. You know, my thinking on this is I'm glad baseball is coming back. I enjoyed being able to go out to, you know, to Huntsville and go to the Stars games. I enjoyed that. I had some good memories from doing that, especially taking my family out there. Or one night we went with our church group, and I mean that was a fun time. And when they went away, it was sad. But at the end of the day, we have to remember it is a business, and if it's dying, it's dying. I mean, if the people are not going to support it, then it needs to go. I mean, quite frankly, that leads to this question, and you're more adept to answer this question than I am. You mentioned you love baseball for it being baseball. Are people going to support the Trash Pandas, no matter what their name is or whether they like their name? Are they going to support them because it's baseball, or are they going to support it just because it's just something to do on a Friday night?
It's new. It's an entertainment district. I give them 3 years. I'll give them 2 years to be very successful. They'll be very successful this year and next year. And if they don't win and don't have Southern League Championship and don't have major league players in the show making major successful, you know, becoming stars, if you would, by the third year, by 2022, they'll be just like any other AAA minor league baseball team. They'll be giving away all the tickets and hoping they live off the concessions.
Yeah. And by the way, let me say this too. I'm not saying that I'm against having them at all. Period. I'm just not a fan of the name. you can rail on me all you want. I'll go to a game. I will go, you know, but it's not because of the fact that, you know, that it, that's, you know, because of the trash pandas drawing me in, mm-hmm. per se. It's mm-hmm. not this logo or this fancy dressed up mm-hmm. mascot of a raccoon on the side. If I want to see a raccoon, I go up my backyard. I'm just saying. Or on the side of the road, more
exactly.
to the point.
You're going
to
see them on the side of the road. Well, and my deal is I'll go and see them play when the Reds farm system, I don't know if it's still the Lookouts from Chattanooga or they've changed it, but whoever the Reds, if the Reds have a franchise, a double-A franchise in the Southern League, that's when I'll go see them.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'll go to Nashville and watch the Sounds, or go to Cincinnati and watch the Reds, or go to Atlanta and watch the Reds when they're in Atlanta, which yeah. I normally do.
Yeah, once a year. Right. I think you go take a weekend over there, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, we normally take a night or two and go over and see the Reds play, and that's good. But baseball season's right around the corner. We've talked a lot of sports in this whole thing. A couple of things we just want to hit on quickly. First of all, the XFL.
Mm.
Fox is selling it. They're hyping it. But they're not giving it the hype, in my opinion. I'm not seeing the hype on the XFL that I saw from last year's American League of Football or whatever it was called.
Yeah, American Football, American Alliance of Football or whatever right. it was called, that folded after 8 games or whatever it was. I'm not seeing necessarily near the hype, but I don't think that's exactly a bad thing either. I think that the expectations were a little bit way too high for the AAF. That was one of my fears even before the season started. I understand why you're marketing this as heavy as you are, because you're trying to draw the interest in, but I think you're going to kill yourself near as quick because of that, because it's going to be a quick flame in the pan. Everybody loves it for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, and then all of a sudden, not only is attendance going to start suffering, but because attendance starts suffering, your numbers, your dollars begin to suffer, and before you know it, you end up in a situation where you can't pay the players and all this, that, and because you don't know how to manage the funds in the first place that you did have. I don't think the XFL has to worry about that with somebody like Vince McMahon hovering over the entire ordeal yet again. But what I am afraid of the way that they are going to do this game. There's, you know, a lot of different rules compared to the NFL or to the college game. You know, Canadian football has their different rules compared to the NFL. And that's sort of what it reminds me of. I think that they're going to lose a lot of the football fans per se, the diehards that just love football, rather than the people who are just kind of your average everyday Joe watchers.
I think this XFL is not as far away from football as the original incarnation
probably
that Vince McMahon came up with, especially on this, the way they determined who was going to get the ball first. Let's kill a player in midfield before the game yeah. starts. I sort of think that the XFL, and again, the way that's being marketed, and of course, Vince McMahon is a shrewd marketer. He's a brilliant man. And I think the way it's being marketed this time is it's not in competition with the NFL, but is another right. football league that plays good football. And right. I guess we'll see, because you look at the players that are signed into the league, they're guys that didn't make the roster in the NFL for this reason or that reason, or perhaps were part of the NFL for a season or so, or maybe for a few games. It's just not what it, you know, it's not being marketed like the AAF or right. the old XFL. I think it may have a chance. Now, come first game of baseball season, unless somebody is real hot and has captured the interest and the fancy of the XFL, nobody's going to be talking about it.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
That's pretty much what it is.
Some stud player out there all of a sudden making the rounds as whatever could be their MVP.
The other thing he did, which I think is smart, is he put the teams in major markets.
Yes.
He didn't put it in Baton Rouge or in Birmingham. No slight to Birmingham, because Birmingham is a football city over and beyond most cities in America. But he put them in major markets where you've got more people to draw from, not only in the area, but from the outside, yeah. the city itself.
Yeah.
And spring's a good time for football. We all enjoy spring football.
Yeah.
So I
yeah.
think it's good. Finally, we didn't get a chance to talk about the Kobe Bryant tragedy. Just if you could sum up in the past few days, past 10 days, 11 days of this, your thoughts about Kobe Bryant and what it's meant to not only yourself, but what it's meant to society in general beyond the world of sports.
Well, someone that is you know, as my age is at 29 years old, you know, I've been very fortunate enough that I was born in 1990. I was coming in right before Jordan hit his prime there to win six championships, you know. And then along towards the end of Jordan's career, at least with the Bulls, here comes Kobe Bryant. And then a few years later along the way comes LeBron James. So I've been fortunate enough to be able to see and remember three of the greats to ever have played the game, you know, in my lifetime. But for me, Kobe Bryant was my Michael Jordan, because growing up, even though I was alive, I was 6 years old when he won his championship in 96. I was 8 years old in 98 when Kobe first came into the league, mm-hmm. and Jordan was winning another championship. I don't remember those championships. I don't remember exactly Kobe coming into the league, but that was before, even when Kobe first came in, that was before the legend of Kobe Bryant was born. Mm-hmm. You know, he came straight out of high school from Pennsylvania, and nobody, you know, only the, like we were talking recruits earlier, only those types of people knew who Kobe Bryant was and what he could be. You fast forward just a few years and you get, you know, him and Shaquille O'Neal teamed up. That's my memories. Mm-hmm. That's when I started remembering and seeing the awesomeness that is Kobe Bryant. And when I began to see the Mamba mentality really be born. And for me personally, on Sunday when that happened, I had been at church like a lot of people. And I got home. We had grabbed something to go from a restaurant and came home and was sitting down. And my phone buzzed, and I looked down, and it was Twitter, actually, buzzing me to give you the news of the day or mm-hmm. whatever. And TMZ reports Kobe Bryant passes away in a helicopter crash. It struck me more than I thought it would. Mm-hmm. I the first instinct reaction was to jump up and say, "You're lying." I told my phone it's lying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my wife, make a long story short, just kind of, you know, what's happening. My wife's not a sports fan. Mm-hmm. Okay. She's not big into that, but she understands my love for it. Fast forward 2 days on Tuesday of that, you know, of last week, I didn't really realize how much that affected me until that day. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't know Kobe Bryant personally. All I knew was is that I have all these memories of him being a great basketball player, winning championships, affecting others around him with his leadership skills that he really didn't develop until the second half of his career after Shaq left. And I try to take some, you know, try to take some points from those. But then over the last two or three years, you know, I think LeBron said this very well the other night. He became one of the best dads probably in all of America,
mm-hmm.
especially, mm-hmm. you know, especially to Gianna, who mm-hmm. unfortunately was one of the nine that was killed. You know, I, and that's no slight to the other, you know, children, but Tuesday night, you know, my wife thought I was mad because I wasn't saying anything. And you know me, that's not typically me. Right, I'll rattle right. off the jaws 24 hours a day.
Right.
I didn't want to speak. I didn't want to speak to anybody. Mm. And it made me do more thinking about, rather than just losing, you know, somebody I grew up, I don't want to say idolizing because I try not to idolize anybody, but somebody that I admired growing up for what not only he did on the court, but off the court as an entrepreneur, a man who was trying to make a name for himself and just be a great man. I felt like almost like a part of Laker Nation, like I lost a piece of me, a brief moment, a piece of me. And it made me think about family. You know, you hear a lot of people talk about that. You know, I lost two grandfathers last year within a 4 month time. And, I was doing a lot of the same thinking after Kobe Bryant passed away that I did with my grandfathers mm-hmm. and, thinking about all this time that I have with my wife, or my mom or my dad who are still here, my sisters, my brother, how I can do things a little bit differently and let go of stuff that just really doesn't matter. So, you know, say all that to say this, we can't just forget about the other nine or the other eight rather. We can't just, you know, forget about seven and say it's all about Kobe and Gianna, because it's not. You know, five families are hurting because of that. But I personally, it was almost a dagger to the heart. It really was.
You know, on top of tragedy, last week was the final week of January was a tragic week with the boat fire accident in yes. Scottsboro. And we locally lost families and members of our community, loved ones for many people. And it was a tough, tough week. It really was. Yeah. And then I think getting back, coming full circle to what we started the show with, I think a lot of that took the air out of this year's Super Bowl.
I agree to that. And just a thought on that is how, you know, I can never, in my 29 years on this earth, I can never remember, you know, we got these big sports events, the Super Bowls, the Pro Bowls, the Senior Bowl was happening at the, you know, through all this, the last couple of weeks, you know. Have we ever had a bigger week of sports news, period?
Yeah, really.
I don't think we have, and it's unfortunately, it's a lot of it's sad.
A lot of it is.
But yes, and let me say this, too, and we can end on this or whatever you want to do, but I watched the Lakers game against Portland. You know, they had a Clippers game scheduled for that Tuesday night. They didn't play it out of respect. They played that Friday night. I watched that game. I watched TNT's tribute to Kobe and Gianna and the family there, as well as the other victims. Let me just tip my cap to Turner Sports and to ESPN. I don't think they could have handled that any better. I think they've done a very fantastic, phenomenal job on paying tribute while still giving you what you expect, because at the end of the day, you know, people don't want to hear it right now. Life still moves on.
The silver lining, I think, to everything was the fact of how many poignant tributes. I mean, just tributes that make you go, oh, wow, I'd have never thought of that. We're done, even with the Super Bowl lining up on the 24-yard line, the 24-second clock expiration, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think there was one, I know there was not one that I saw, tribute that I just was not totally taken back with it and said, what a fine way to remember someone.
Yeah.
Well, we've been chatting a lot, and of course, Michael St. John, Adam Ward, Fun and Then Some is this podcast. Tell your friends about it. We're promoting it on our Facebook page and our Twitter page and on Instagram. We're going to put one of these a week up, and if you like it, we'll continue to do it. If you don't like it, we'll continue to do it. So, but anyway, we appreciate you joining us. There's a lot to talk about. It won't all be sports. This one was really sports heavy, but yeah. I think that's because of the time of the year we are. But there's a lot. We will not dive into politics. That is the one thing Adam and I said when we first started this. This is not a political forum. We're not going to make it a political forum.
No.
And we're going to talk about fun stuff. We'll talk about sports. We'll talk about things going on. We'll talk about all sorts of good stuff. And give us a listen again. Thank you for listening to this podcast today.
And if you own a business, we would like for you to get in on this with us. We'd like to partner up with you on that, if you would. You can give us a call at our brand new phone number at the radio station, 256-531-9927. Let me give that to you again, 256-531-9927. If you would like to be a part of the Fun and Then Some podcast, you own a business, you want to advertise your business, let us know. We'll give you some. We will make sure to give you some live reads on this as well. We'll get with you and set all that up, but we would love to have you on board the Fun and Then Some podcast. I am Adam Ward for Michael St. John. In the words of the immortal Kobe Bryant, Mamba out.